Hi, y'all. My name is Noah McKenzie, and I'm finishing up my junior year at North Raleigh Christian Academy. This past basketball season, we did lead them up throughout the year, and looking back, it benefited our team in so many ways. For one, it was just always a good time with constant laughter and jokes, and one of those activities that really brought us together as a team and built our chemistry. But even more importantly for the team and for me individually, the green teammate talk really took our team to the next level. Our coach really drove that lesson home for us, and it transformed us from a collection of guys into a selfless, driven, and functioning team that was building each other up. I'm super stoked and looking forward to how it will benefit and mold our squad next year.
You're listening to the Lead 'Em Up podcast, powered by Chick-fil-A. Thank you for hanging with us today. Today's episode is going to be a little different. And normally we are bringing on coaches and athletic directors and athletes of sorts. Today we're bringing on a restaurant owner. And you may think, like, what does that have to do with Lead 'Em Up per se? Obviously, as we engage in the topic of leadership and we're working with our teams and our athletes, we're always trying to drive them to greatness, allowing them to reach their full potential. And in many ways, if they could, become a champion. And a friend of mine, Kenneth McFaughn, restaurant owner here, right in my neighborhood, essentially, Frederick County, owns a restaurant called White Rabbit Gastro Pub. One of my wife and I's favorite spots to go to in Frederick, Maryland. If you're ever through the area, absolutely stop by. Well, Kenneth recently had an opportunity to go out to Vegas and participate in the International Pizza Expo. This is like the Super Bowl for pizza makers, right? And as he competed, he came out on top. In fact, his pizza, and this episode may make you a little hungry, his pizza won the number one deep dish pizza in the world. Kenneth, first of all, am I teeing that up right? Is that accurate? International Pizza Expo, number one deep dish pizza in the world?
Yeah, I mean, semantics, but it's the World Pizza Championship that happens at the world at the International Pizza Expo. But yeah, it's we won World Pizza Championship. It was really cool.
So you sit here right now, and for the next 12 months at least, right until the next competition, you've got the best deep dish pizza in the world, According to the competition.
I have the best. Yes. It was a very unique pizza. It's definitely gone viral through the pizza industry, and I'm not allowed to compete in the division for 2 years.
Really? Why is that? They just say you're done.
Yeah. And there's actually, there's four divisions within it. And on the last day, all four of the top compete for Pizza Maker of the Year. And if you win that, you can never compete again in any category.
Wow. Did you compete in that then this year?
I did.
Okay. Okay. Well, now listen, hey, one step at a time here, right?
I know.
No, hold on. They're preventing you from being able to get that back to back. That's not right.
Well, so I can compete in a round pie, like a traditional New York style. So I just need to change my skill set and keep improving.
Okay. Well, listen, nonetheless, the accomplishment's incredible, right? Anytime you go against, you know, I mean, anytime you can win anything is great, right? When it becomes that large of scale with that many different countries and individuals and experts involved and you come out on top, like, you know, I'm not a pizza maker, but if that's the craft that you're in and that's your industry, I can only imagine how amazing that feels to be able to walk away and say, we did it, right? We're on top. But I want to dig in because people that land in those places, that find themselves in the championship space as you have, don't stumble there, right? They don't accidentally land there. It requires years and years of intentionality. I want to ask you, because I think it's very parallel to sports. You know, one thing we say in sports, if you're going to improve your craft, you better get your reps. You better start practicing. You better start improving your skill. Fill us in from a pizza perspective. What type of reps, how many years, how many pizzas have you made? Like, what is that practice of developing the skill? Like, take us through that mindset, Kenneth.
I mean, it kind of leads into a bigger story. But essentially, when you're going through and you don't realize that you're doing the reps, you're just doing it to learn. You're doing it to understand and every aspect of it, because cheese, the way that it's aged and the moisture content in it can change from temperature to cook time. So there's, I mean, it is a very scientific experiment that you're doing than trying to perfect pizza and the things that you're looking at. And there's a huge variety of cheeses out there, a huge variety of ovens, flour. There's just a lot of variables. And then when you're going in there and, you know, doing true scientific experiments, you're changing one aspect at a time. And then you're seeing what that means. And then you're just perfecting and perfecting and then keeping going. And then finally, you get a bake time down and you're like, I know this is 485 degrees for 7.5 minutes if it has 5 ounces of toppings on it. And you know that. And you're like, I can check that one box. I got that. Let's move on to the next thing. Let's go perfect this next aspect. Mm.
So how long have you been making pizzas?
I worked at some pizza restaurants in high school. And you know, I was never on the level of those guys. And I mean, when you're on there and you're on a Friday night at J&P Pizza in Mount Airy, and you see those guys turning pizzas in the oven and everything, it's a skill, and they know every ticket that's out and they know everything that's coming up. And there was just no way to get up to that level. Cause these guys just laugh at you. Like, there's no way you're going to come in here and like be near operating this thing on a Monday lunch, nevertheless, like a Friday night. So it was always kind of intimidating, being on like that level of pizza. So I learned a bit, you know, going through that, but honestly, it was probably the last like 4 years, we knew we were going to make a switch into pizza. And when we made the switch at the White Rabbit, it's been a couple of years now. It was every day, all day for a long time.
Like, can you even quantify how many pizzas you think you've kind of cooked yourself? I mean, I know that's like hard to calculate, like thousands. Yeah.
Not as many free throws as Kobe's put up.
Okay.
In practice. But I don't know if anybody's, you know, I'd say when you say like number of reps to put in, that's probably like around the pinnacle, right? When people, mm-hmm. you know, are referencing something. But like, you know, if I'm making a pizza, you know, honestly, it's probably an 8 minute bake time at least. And then you're looking at, you know, 2 minutes to build it. So like your one experiment right there. I mean, you're looking at like, you know, doing 4 or 5 experiments an hour. An hour, and then writing that down, seeing how it turned out, and then going back and then repping it out again. So I'd say like probably, I don't know, let's say 365 days in a year, break it down with like 5 working days, maybe like.
It's in the thousands. It's in the thousands.
Yeah. Yeah. In the thousands for sure.
Yeah.
And we've made so many that we didn't know what to do with them. We didn't want to waste them. So we actually just went around and gave them to our friends and family, bartenders, waiters, waitresses downtown. It was a great way to have everybody to start talking about White Rabbit Pizza, because they're all the staff is just getting free pizza all the time. But I can't tell you how many times we passed out free pizzas all through downtown Frederick.
You know, so it's interesting. So you 4 years, specifically 5 years, you know, thousands of pizzas, and you know, just trying to get it down, like the attention to detail. I like, if you would, you kind of started to share some of those attention to details that are needed to be successful, like the flour, the cheese, the cook time, the topping as it relates to the cook time. Speak about some other unique details that you've got to get right, that the untrained eye or the average consumer never even thinks about from a pizza perspective, but someone in the industry, oh man, you're on it. What are some of those details?
Number one's going to be crispiness. It's a really hard thing to master. And if you think about it, like a pizza comes out of the oven and then you put it in a cardboard box, like it should just steam up and be soggy. So there's a specific method that you have to do and like a place that it has to be at before you can even get it in the box.
Okay.
And there's got to be a moisture content on top of it so that when you cut it, all the moisture is going to go. If you have really, really soggy, wet tomato sauce and you over cheese the pizza, that's too much moisture. When you cut it and you put it in the box, all that moisture is going to leak down. It doesn't matter how good you bake the bottom. It's going to turn out like crud. Mm. I mean, that's like one easy thing, you know, but like the other thing is just like, you know, when you look at like you know, one bite challenge, right? Well, like the cool thing about that is like, there's a great ratio, and there's a ratio for every person, but there's also like a very good ratio for 80% of the people. That's the perfect amount of sauce, the perfect amount of cheese, and then the perfect amount of crust. Like once you have that like really good bite, and it's like, it seems very easy to think about it. Just be like, yeah, you just get the right ratios, right? But it's like the hardest thing to come up with. And like one extra dab of cheese can just throw the whole thing off.
I remember seeing at some point on one of your stories, you know, that because one of the things I thought was really neat and share a little bit on this, as you were trying to perfect your craft, you've spent a lot of time studying and meeting with other pizza makers around the world, award-winning pizza makers. I believe in preparation of the competition, you traveled down to DC or something like that to kind of meet with a previous winner.
Yes.
Share a little bit about that, because I think that there's a lot of value, especially if you're a coach or a player listening to this, like this desire to learn, right? This desire to like improve your craft, sometimes coming from others and like seeking that out and being hungry, pun intended, right? Being hungry for success. Like speak about how you've embraced mentors and what are you learning from them?
So you hit a couple of good aspects so far. So you were like number of reps. So once you get the muscle memory and you do the reps, then everything is second nature. And like one of the real points of doing reps in any sport is when it comes down to it and they're going to give you the ball and you have a chance to win, you did the reps, you put it in, and the your muscle memory is just going to take over and you're going to succeed. So the second aspect of that is definitely a championship mentality. When we met with Andy from Andy's Pizza, he won the round division. So like for a traditional New York style, he has the best in the world. And he's not going to compete this year, but I guarantee you he's got the best in the world this year too. It's right here in Washington, D.C. It's amazing. When they went over there, they had two locations. I think they're at 7 right now. And when he had the award in his hand and he won, he said, I'm going to open 10 locations in 2 years. That's his goal. He's the man. When we met with them, we've been friends with them for a little while. And he invited us out there to a new location, Adams Morgan, that hadn't opened yet. So they had a little bit of foot traffic, but it was predominantly kind of shut down. So we had easy access to the kitchen and everything. Because normally when Andy's Pizza open, you're not a chance you're going to be able to get in there. So one of the cool things that like Andy was walking through with us was, let me tell you what happens from A to Z. Let me tell you what happens when you get off the plane to where you store your dough, where you're going to check in. And I'm going to walk you through everything. So that way you can start thinking about how to win and not worrying about those little things. Because Andy's whole goal was, let's make it the pizza mecca. I want you guys to win the World Pizza Championship. I want you to come back here. And then I want people to say that, oh my goodness, like in Washington, D.C., and then right over here in Maryland, they have two back-to-back World Pizza Championship winners. So if we could do that, it's going to be good for both of us. And then the second caveat to that was, just don't open a spot in D.C. And I said, that's fine. That's your territory. No problem. But going through it, and like even in the orientation on like how what rules change from year to year, going through what questions you need to ask, the ovens are different over there. You might not have the same oven that you're used to be using, or it's going to be like some minute detail. You're used to using a 36-inch rack. There's a 48-inch rack. You know, you're used to using a triple decker. It's a double decker. Like there's all kinds of things. So he was like, I recommend you use a pizza master. The rep is going to be out there. You need to talk to him during orientation. You need to schedule a time. You can go rep out that morning. So get to the convention center at 5:30 in the morning, meet the rep, get out there, start repping out your pizzas, and understand that, you know, the convention center in the morning, 60 degrees. By the time you're competing, it's 72 degrees. You got to see where your oven needs to be at. You got to see about your temperature, your bake times, and just make sure your dough is reacting the way that you think it's going to, the travel time and all this stuff. And really just like, so all of a sudden we walked in there. We didn't walk in with, hey, we're at the Pizza Expo. Let's figure out what to do. We walked in there on a third level. So everything that we were thinking of, we already had 1 and 2 covered because we went through it with Andy, like in specific details. It was like 4.5 hours. It took like 4 or 5 different pizzas and we went through every single thing. So we went in there, we were able to go in with a championship mentality. It wasn't thinking of how do we bake our pizza to see if it works. We knew how to go, what to do, who to talk to, when to schedule a time, and what was going to happen with it.
And that advice from Andy, you received that though. Like you received that and heard it loud and clear and took it and used it, right? Because I think sometimes people get advice and they don't necessarily own it the way they should. Sounds like you took everything Andy shared and implemented it.
I mean, if you have a chance to sit down with somebody that won the competition that you're competing in the year before, like, how ignorant would I be if I did not take in every aspect of it? And he's so confident. Like, he knew he was going to win going in there. He just said, I just have to make the pizza. I've already won it. Like, that was his whole mentality. When he was talking to investors and his friends and family and everything, he said, I need you guys to get to work on these new locations. I'm coming home with the World Pizza Championship. And then at the end of it, I was like, anything else to tell us? And he said, yeah, you just got to go out there and win.
Yeah. That little line you said, though, is so true, though. Like, when talking to a winner, how ignorant would I have to be not to listen? But I think about that, right? I mean, but that's life. Like, I can't tell you how often coaches, players, people in general have the ability to talk to someone who knows, who's experienced it, who's lived it, has great wisdom, has great insight, and we still don't listen, right? Because sometimes we're our own worst enemy, right? Our ego gets in the way and things like that. So the fact that you said that, I love the way you phrased it because it's true, right? Like, there needs to be a level of humility. I think at any point, if you want to become a champion at any level, the humility has to be there, because without the humility, you don't allow yourself to tap into the growth mindset, right? Because you think you already know it. You think you've already got it figured out, or you think you'll be able to figure it out on your own. One of my kind of circles, mentors, once told me the only way and the only shortcut to success is through mentorship, right? Everything else you've got to experience, right? But if you've got the right mentor, it can actually shortcut you through success. Everyone else had to learn levels 1 and 2, right? In Vegas on their own through trial and error. The mentor helps you skip the step to level 3. That, what a great lesson for us to be people that are hungry to learn from other people, to acquire as much wisdom and guidance, and be humble enough to allow it to change us and impact us. I love that you added that.
I mean, one thing I always say is 2 ears, 1 mouth. You should always listen twice as much as you talk.
So you go out there, you've learned. Side note, I think I saw in one of your stories when you were meeting with him, you talked about and this was an interesting little side pizza detail. If any cheese overflows the crust, that's a negative. Is that accurate?
100%. When we were talking about those like perfect ratios on there, right? So like when you're on there, if the cheese is going over, you should be able to see the bake of the crust the entire way through. So the cheese is top, right on top.
So listen, hey, for all those listening, that's a new detail. If you see cheese overflowing the crust, unless you specifically ask for it that way, they've got the wrong ratio, is what you're saying.
Totally. But let me follow up on that. That doesn't mean to get online and write them a bad review. Everybody can be heavy-handed one day. You know what I mean? Like, they might even deserve a second chance. I've done it myself.
All right. So here's another question. As you were practicing all these things, like to get this pizza to the championship level, you were talking about you were experimenting and getting your reps, 485 for 7 minutes, 485 at 8 minutes for this many toppings, things, all these things. Okay. How do you know you were actually improving? Like, how do you know? Because you're doing it based on your own subjective opinion. And I say that because even in like sports sometimes, you know, it's always a wonder, like, are we getting better? How do we know we're getting better? Until you actually go and compete, you weren't competing in your practice rounds amongst yourselves. How did you know our pizza's getting better? It's almost there.
So, great question. I have a story that I have to tell also that is going to like kind of tie a lot of these things in.
Go for it.
I've been going to pizza expos for a while. And at the pizza expos, you have the best pizza makers in the world sitting there handing out pizzas, literally showing you like what they can do with the best flour, with the best ovens, with the best tomatoes. And they're all in front of all these stands. And so you're walking down the expo and it's a football field and you're just walking down and you have these guys you're reading books about and they're just handing you slices of pizza. So you literally get to walk around and have the best pizza in the world, try all kinds of new styles, new different types of bakes and all these amazing things. It's very, very stimulating. when I'm going out there, I'm literally trying the best pizzas. So then I can follow up, and the people that are in New York and the people that are in New Jersey, I go to their restaurants and I actually eat their pizzas. So I go to see like what they're working with, how they're doing it, how they understand such high volume. Because if you can put out a quality product, but you can, anybody in your restaurant can put it out, and you can put out 1,000 of them in a day, that's skill. Not the one guy who can put out one pizza one time and that's it. I want multiple times and I want them all to be good. Like, that's the hard part. So when you're going into it, it's like, who am I going to look at? I'm going to look at the one guy with a solo pizza oven on his back porch, just pulling one oven out and wowing all of his friends. That might be the best pizza. I'm not going to make any money on that. Like, I want something that everybody can eat every day and all my employees can make. So it was eating other people's pizzas that I thought were the best. And there's one specific one that blew my mind. It was Emmy Squared in Brooklyn. We went there for lunch, and me, my business partner, and our wives, and we had a Michelin star place booked for dinner. And we went to the Michelin star place and sat down, and we left. And we went back to Emmy Squared, and we ate the same exact meal that we ate for lunch. Mm. It was that good.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, when you're looking at like, when we were, well, anyways, like I got to back up on this. So White Rabbit originally sold steak frites. So a traditional steak frites, it's like a French Belgian dish. It's a flat iron steak that is cut out and butterflied with house cut French fries and then a nice sauce on top of it. It's a great dish. It was awesome. There was nobody else in Frederick serving it. It was easy to make, and it was something that we could really put a lot of skill and effort to and put it up at a higher level. Then the pandemic hits. March 20th, 2020, Governor Hogan shuts down all dine-in. What do I do? Well, I order a lot more to-go containers. The only thing is, the worst dish in the world to carry out is steak frites. They're house-cut French fries that steam up in a box. It's got a steak that goes up a temperature as soon as you put it in the box and it steams up, topped with a cream sauce that breaks. It was the worst dish. I had to watch my friends and family, my neighbors, order carry out. And then I knew that they weren't getting a quality product. I knew it. It's supposed to be consumed on premise. We never had a big carry out before. So I'm sitting here watching the pandemic. I don't know what to do. We were the first restaurant in Frederick to actually have a case of COVID. Everybody freaked out. We didn't know what to do. So we shut down for a couple months. And I started reading the forums, and I'm looking at like what businesses are succeeding right now. And there's two: carry out Chinese food and carry out pizza. So anytime I pitch something, I got to pitch it to my business partner. Iron sharpens iron. He tears everything apart. So I know if I'm going to pitch something to him, I got to do 10 times more research than I would to anybody else. So I have a meeting with him and my business partner and our general manager at the White Rabbit. And I do three works worth of research, and I rewrite a business plan for us. And I say, we're going to go to lunch. And they're like, where are we going? I was like, just walk with me. We walk down to East Street, down to Pistaro's. There's a line wrapped around the building. And I said, what's the difference between this restaurant and ours? I said, there's a huge line of people at this restaurant. And I said, yeah, we're going to start serving pizza. Then we came back, and I had three business plans printed out, and I sat down in front of them, and I showed them exactly how we were going to do it. The ovens we were going to use, where everything would be stored, what the prep was going to look like, a basic idea for dough, how we would roll it out. We shut down for 3 days after I ordered everything, and we started serving pizza during the pandemic, and the only reason why was to survive. Mm. It was my idea. I had to see it through. So I was in there every day, researching it, figuring out how to make the best dough, how to make our dough storage, understand exactly how the oven works. And I basically acted as the head chef. We had a head chef at the time. He didn't know what to do either, but he wasn't as motivated as me. It was my ass on the line. I'm the one that wrote the business plan on it. So the real reps came out of fear. I got to make this thing work. So then, Adam, the craziest thing happened. We had a bunch of high-end chefs that were making really good specials, steak frites and things like that. That was their world. They were really stimulated by it. So all of a sudden, our chefs start leaving us. And they're getting pitches from places like Firestone's and Wine Kitchen that are saying, what are you guys going to make pizza now? Like, what are you doing? Like, we're making specials and everything over here. Like, come work for us. So I have all these talented guys I put a lot of time and effort into. Some of my good friends are leaving me. And so I said, that's it. We got to flip the script. We're going to change this whole thing. We're not just making pizza. We're making world championship pizza. And everybody was like, what are you talking about? And I said, we're going to the World Pizza Championship. We are now, right now, the White Rabbit is going to start serving World Pizza Championship pizza. And I want signs over the whole restaurant. And this is a year and a half before we competed. And I made all the managers and everybody use the same verbiage and say, is this championship quality? And so no matter what, when you're talking to employees, if you should send a pizza back because you don't think it's worthy, the statement was, is this world championship quality? It was a whole mindset. It changed everything.
Hey guys, this is Kayla from Chick-fil-A, and this is today's Leadership Nugget. They say that you are the sum of the five people you spend the most time with. So the question is your circle forcing you to level up? I often remind my team that they are responsible for who they allow to influence their life. Are those people contributing to their success or are they holding them back? Great leaders know when and how to edit their circle because you see, as the leader changes, the circle has to change. It doesn't mean that you're cutting people out of your life completely, but you're limiting the amount of time that you spend with them and how much influence you give them over your habits and your commitments. So my challenge for you today is that as you continue to fight for personal growth, commit to selecting the right people to influence your habits and match your hustle. Surround yourself only with people that force you to level up. Now let's jump back to the episode.
Yeah, I remember when you made that shift and, you know, during the pandemic, you started doing the pizzas. We collaborated on something for my local neighborhood here and the pizzas were a big part of that. I remember you sharing that. And by the way, I love the pizza. In fact, I've had it 3 days in a row, which I don't know if that's healthy, but I literally have because you sponsored and then my neighbors ordered it yesterday, nonetheless. So side note, completely side note. My wife does want to know if steak frites are coming back.
Probably not.
She literally asked that question last night when our neighbors ordered pizzas from there.
Yeah. I miss them too. Oh,
man.
I know. I miss them too.
Heartbroken. She can be heartbroken. All right. Okay. So a lot of good things, right? I love this whole, you know, you kind of, I mean, you basically in many ways spoke it into existence, right? About this championship mindset. We're going to do this. And you begin, you know, kind of preaching. And in that process, you're elevating standards in the workplace that begins moving you closer to that level, right? I am curious about the amount of time that it takes, because when you went out to Vegas, it wasn't just you. There were other people there making pizzas. Like you weren't the only one making pizzas in Vegas. You're not the only one making pizzas here in Frederick. What type of teaching and instruction and intentionality and attention to detail do you teach to them? Okay. Like, are you micromanaging everything that they do? Are you like, nope, that's wrong. Pepperoni's wrong. Like, what are you doing? You know, like take us through that coaching process to get others, because now that you're a world championship pizza maker, essentially everybody there is a world championship pizza maker, or at least they have to be.
I 100% think of it that way. And our team that went out there was amazing. And especially like the guys at Rad Pies also that make all the dough and do everything. I mean, they've taken every class possible. They've put in so much time and effort. Like it's 100% like from them. But I think the way that we explain everything at the White Rabbit comes from as if somebody had to manage me, which is not an easy task, but I pick everything apart and I want to know why something is done the way that it is. And if I believe in that whole process, then I'm on board like 100%. I feel like a lot of millennials are like that also.
They want to know the why, right? They want to know the why.
Exactly. Yeah. And so like, if you're able to talk to somebody and you say, just do it this way, or you're doing it wrong, it's like, that's so negative. And it's so like, how would anybody react well to that? But if you explain to them why you're doing what you're doing and why it needs to be done that way, and it's stuck in their head, it's so cool the next week to see that same person training somebody else on that technique and then explaining why, and then they get it. And it's like, that's what you want. That's the cool game of operator.
Are you like, how obsessive are you over these pizzas now though? Like I want to be honest here. You now have a reputation though of like excellence that you have to live up to. And that could almost consume many people, right? To be so micromanaging, so OCD and obsessive compulsive over every little detail that it begins to like disrupt the workplace, right? Begins to create tension in the workplace. And people are struggling to kind of coexist with you in light of that because you're just now. So, and I say that because that's what happens in coaching, right? Once coaches begin to experience success and they become a championship level coach, and now their reputation has changed and how people perceive them change. They now begin holding standards and managing and leading their people differently, right? Because they feel pressure now. Has that played in? And if so, like, how are you balancing that?
That's a great question. The one main big difference on this is it's still just hospitality for me. You know, and so like if they have a world, you know, championship level pizza, like, of course, that's important to me. But like what's bigger to me is, do they have a good time? You know, are they going to come back? And I'm hyper focused on all the little things all the time. Like when I walk into the restaurant, I'm looking at the lighting, the sound, whether or not I was greeted, if there's any tables that are dirty. Like I'm picking every single thing apart, and all my employees know that also. Like when Kenneth walks in, he's going to find five things wrong as soon as he walks in the door. Just things that I'm going to notice. But as far as like, you know, putting out a product and getting obsessed over it, I put a lot of time and effort into going out and competing. I honestly did not think that I was going to win. I never thought about doing any culinary competition or anything like that. The only reason why I did compete is because when we were doing the competitions to see who was going to go out to Vegas, my pizzas were way better than everybody's every time. But that's because I put in all the work at the very beginning, and I'd just been so used to repping out. And I mean like doing the stuff on unseasoned pans at the very beginning, at the wrong temperatures with the wrong dough. And like, I've just been through all the wrong things so many times. Like now when something is right and it comes out, it's so second nature to me. It's so easy. I'm very, you know, easily able to do it. But because I didn't go to culinary school and I didn't spend like all this time really cooking, it was more of a, you know, it was really just because of COVID that we figured all this out. I've always loved pizza. I've always very, you know, interested in it, but I've never had this like ego about it. It's always, I mean, this whole thing is super humbling, and like, I'm very gracious to be in this position, but yeah, it never got egotistical for me.
Hmm. Yeah. You talk about it being second nature, muscle, you know, muscle movement at this point, muscle memory. You know, it was funny because our daughters, youngest daughters, go to school together, and you recently sponsored their little summer cookout picnic with all the pizzas. And you were essentially cooking this pizza, award-winning, off the little ovens in the school, right? And I joked with you like how does that happen? And you basically said, like, once you get to a point, you've done it so many times, you've got it figured out. You just know the secret of how to get it there each time.
And yeah.
Agree with that? Like, I mean, essentially, yeah, that's what you were saying.
100%.
So, but like, think about that. I mean, that's where many people, when they're leaning into improving their craft and they want to improve what, let's say they're a public speaker or an athlete or a teacher, whatever it happens to be, can you get to the point where it is so ingrained and instilled in you and becomes so second nature and part of you that like, you just produce excellence in all that you do. You just produce excellence in all that you go, right? Whether you're cooking in this oven or this oven, this is what you get. That's high level. That's when you know you're at a level that's like, dude, that's crazy.
100%. That's also when it's the most fun. You know, like in society, you look at like people that are getting near retirement. And like the one thing that I've always thought about with this is like, once somebody gets near retirement, it's got to be so hard because you're so good. It's not just the fact that you won't be doing that job anymore, but like you struggled at whatever the skill that was for so many years, and you went through so many failures and heartbreaks and things that went wrong, that like you finally get on that level when you're near retirement, where you're just so good at it. And think about how hard that would be to step away at that age. you know, like.
I admit, I have never thought about that before. And now that you bring it up, you're absolutely right. You know, when I speak to like different individuals nearing retirement that are like experts in their field, right, or experts in their craft, they, you're totally right. They are so good. Like they do this stuff in their sleep. They just have so much wisdom built up. And that's a great point. You walk away and it's just like, you're not utilizing it anymore.
I know.
Yeah. That's wild. Yeah.
I mean, you like a skilled public speaker, you get somebody that has been doing it for, they have forgotten so much that you haven't learned yet, you know? And like, things that might trip us up still on like a stalled audience or something. He's like, I remember back in 86, you know?
No, totally. So, all right, Kenneth, as we wrap up here, I want to dig into the day of, right? The day of the competition. I want to get into the mindset that you had on that day. And because I always think people are intrigued about like the mindset of a champion, such a buzz statement. So take us through that day. So you know, today's the big day. You'd been kind of there, I'm guessing, a few days before, kind of practicing, kind of, and you knew, all right, Thursday, we are competing. This is our time slide. We've got X amount of time to do it. Judging is happening at this. What's happening? Like, where are you mentally? Are you just like, man, just visualizing everything throughout the day, like doing strong visualizations? Are you nervous? Are you anxious? Are you confident? Man, take us into the emotions, into the mindset that's going through your mind on championship day.
It was an interesting day. It was the Pan Pizza division competed over 2 days, and it was the only division where you actually presented to the judges. So every other division was done blind. The reason why it was, you're able to present to the judges was because there's such a difference of a wide array of pizzas that can go in a pan. You can have a Connecticut pizza, which is cooked in hot oil, which is traditionally a New York style pizza, but it's just done in a pan, right? You can have Chicago, you can have Detroit, you can have literally anything. You can make a regular pizza, just put it in a pan and compete in that division. But you have to be able to go to the judges and explain. So I was just watching everybody. And the one nice thing about cooks is a lot of them are introverts and they're not good public speakers. So I was like, well, this is a huge plus for me. I got a good background in public speaking. I'm not shy. I know I can win these guys over. So at least I have a leg up, you know, on that aspect. And I remember texting my ex-wife after the first day, and I texted her on Tuesday night and I said, I see the pizzas these guys are putting out and I'm not kidding. Like, I think I can win this. And she was like, okay, good luck. You know, and I was like, and this one person I said that to, I don't know why I texted her, but I went into it and I was like, I think I can actually do this. Like, I see what these guys are doing. So one guy did a pairing with wine the day before, and I didn't know you could do alcohol pairings. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, Rab Pies is in a brewery. White Rabbit has 42 taps. We're all trained in beer. I'm going to do a beer pairing with it. And so
that's a big last minute move.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Just figuring out what beer to get, when, whatever, and coming up with a spiel on why you're going to do that. But it was all my first and second level stuff was already out of the way. That was already done. I wasn't nervous about any of those things. I knew the oven I was going to use. My rep was there. He knew the temp and time. We were all set. Right. And I just wasn't nervous. I just was not nervous at all. And so the pan division was over 2 days. I was on the second day. The events
was that, advantage? Was that an advantage?
I thought it was. A lot of the former pizza champions were all competing with me, like on the last day. They were kind of sprinkled, you know, throughout anyways. But at the expo, there's a lot of demos going on. And so there's a lot of like competitions too, like who can stretch a pizza dough the biggest. And like, it's crazy. So there's like literally like a circus full of stuff. Well, everything else is shutting down and everybody's going over to the pizza competition. So all of a sudden this crowd's just getting bigger, bigger and bigger. So I was supposed to go sixth to last. And the organizer came over and he's, you know, kind of stressing out. And he's like, you know, these ovens are tied up. We're going to put you fifth to last. I said, no problem. They're tied up. We're going to let this other guy go now. So you're just going to be fourth. The crowd's getting bigger. You know what I mean? The judges only have four pizzas left to eat. That's it. Out of the entire World Pizza Competition, they're going to have four left. Another guy comes over. We're just going to put you third to last. No problem. Sat right here. No problem. I'd already made one pizza. You can only make two pizzas.
But isn't your pizza getting cold?
I hadn't made mine yet. I'm waiting for the oven to clear up. And all these other guys are doing prep work. And they're like, hey, would you mind if I slide in? And I'm just like, no problem. I want to go last. I don't tell anybody that. But I worked it out. So I went last. I just saw everything getting bigger. The lights were getting bigger. The buzz was getting bigger. Like everything. And I wanted that. I wanted that electricity.
Yeah, I could see that.
So then the last guy, he's a former World Pizza Champion. He's like, would you mind if I slide in? It's like, no problem. Go right ahead. He puts his out. He goes out there. And then I took mine out of the oven. And I told you, you know, before, but I felt like a higher power had my hands and just pulled this miraculous. I mean, honestly, it was the best pizza I've ever made. And pulled out of the oven. And like, I heard everybody around me, which are all World Pizza Champions, just kind of and everyone was like, that's a good looking pizza, you know. And so I went over and we had a couple six packs of Miller High Life, and we cracked it with all the judges. And the one announcer kind of discounted me, and he's like, oh, look at this guy giving a shit beer. He's an Australian guy. And I was like, actually, this is great because it's a triple pepperoni pizza and this beer is finished with a champagne yeast. So it has a petite carbonation on a higher level than a normal beer. So when you're eating this super fatty triple pepperoni piece of pizza, this beer is going to reset your palate. Hmm. And they're all like, whoa. It was like, yeah, well, I actually know more about beer than I do pizza.
So you go last. And you're feeling calm all day. Yeah, I think it's really interesting that you pivoted and added such a huge wrinkle to your final game plan there of adding the beer. I think there's a lesson in there for all of us just to kind of keep in the back of our mind that, you know, sometimes you just got to go with your gut, right? Sometimes if you feel something in the last moment, you know, you just got to go with it. Like if you feel like this is the right way, you know, some people are so caught up in their game plan and stuff like that. No, this is what we prepare. No, we can't change anything. This is what's got us here. And you're like, I feel like adding a beer would actually be really good. You felt that and you just went with it.
I mean, yeah. I mean, once you're on that level and you're able to like actually see how things can play out. I mean, I can't even use like me and Tom Brady in the same sentence. But somebody like that, if he's going up there and he's reading the defense and he calls an audible,
he knows what he's doing.
There's no second guessing him. You know, like that's truth. Let's go. Yeah.
And it's actually funny. And I know this isn't the point of your final little story here, but I'm intrigued on this. You're actually right. And about the audible, you actually think about if you go back to and study champions, they almost always have an audible of sorts. There's always a moment when you watch the documentaries and you watch the success stories and the ESPN films and things like that of them documenting. You always find these moments where the coach or the player, they did something completely off script. And it was like this unorthodox, but it was them almost kind of like, almost feeling this, like this inner feeling, like this is what we need. I feel compelled to do it. This is what's going to drive us. And then not only making the change, but actually going like all in on the change.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
we're going to pivot here, but guess what? That's where we're going. Let's go.
I mean, 100%, like, and not just with like coaching and players and everything, but with businesses.
Your pizza decision at COVID. Great example.
Well, like YouTube started off as a dating website. Their whole goal was like YouTube, like, hey, you can see me, I can see you. What they found is they made the ultimate technology for users to be able to upload videos. But like their whole business model and what they started with and created this awesome technology was not what it was supposed to be in any way. But it's really cool to like, if you're able to like clear your head and really think about just, you know, being the best at whatever you can do and let life throw what it's going to throw at you. You know what I mean? It could be teammates. It could be coaches. It could be a new division. I mean, how many times did college teams switch, you know, from one league to another? And like, you know, all of a sudden it's like your whole game plan is like screwed up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, dude, this could be a huge benefit. Like, don't look down on this. This is a whole new thing.
Kenneth, as we wrap up here, you won in the Detroit style pizza. Explain for someone that is not familiar with Detroit style pizza, what is Detroit style pizza?
All right, I'll try to keep this under 3 minutes. So manufacturing used to be done by humans turning wrenches on assembly lines, like the Ford factory in Michigan. All the cars were produced out of Detroit. In Detroit, they had these cold roll steel pans, and that's what they put all the nuts and bolts in. So when you go clock in at a Ford factory line, you'd grab your pans of nuts and bolts and you'd go to your line. As those factories started shutting down, these pans were floating around the city. These guys in the 50s started making pizzas out of them. So they're these 3.5-inch lip cold rolled steel pans that go in a 500 degree oven. So when the cheese is on top and ends up melting down to the sides, it hits that hot steel and it caramelizes and makes a wall of cheese all the way around. So you have a rectangle pizza that's about 1.5 inches high with a wall of cheese all the way around it and then cheese on top. And that's a Detroit pizza.
That's crazy. As I said, I've been eating White Rabbit pizza all weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, had a slice today for lunch. That's what's on the outside of that. That's actually cheese.
That's caramelized cheese. We used two different kinds, but yeah.
That's caramelized cheese. Okay.
It was a happy accident.
That's crazy now that I know that. Okay. I just assumed it was because it's connected to the pizza and it's crunchy and like thought it was just crust or of sorts. I didn't know.
That's a 24-month age white cheddar.
Wow. I mean, it's delicious, don't get me wrong. And but then you also put pepperoni on the out exterior and the crust as well.
So that's the one that I won with. Yeah, like Detroit pizza was always just a cheese wall and that's it. And nobody had added anything else in. And we innovated and came up with this one pizza. And it's like, it's viral. It's all over. Like every major pizza restaurant now has a pepperoni crust pizza on it.
Jeez. Kenneth, enjoyed this conversation today and congratulations to you once again, world winner on deep dish pizza, but enjoyed the conversation, just digging into the mindset. And I think there's so many different inspiring conversations and takeaways from here with just everything from just soaking up mentors' advice, from the repetition, from the need to pivot at times, to going with your gut in various moments, even in crucial moments, if that's what feels right. The level of preparation needed to be successful. You step into this environment, although being your first time, you have the mindset of an experienced individual due to the fact that you're willing to learn and take notes and receive that, which is, you know, you essentially took a shortcut to your own success as a result. A lot of great lessons that, regardless if we're talking pizza, football, public speaking, it doesn't matter. You know, always follow the clues, the habits of success, right? Because they will tell a story. I always say, do not study the success of outliers, right? Because it won't lead you there, right? But these clues that are consistent, that are helpful, that you always tend to have show up in winners, that you, as you just laid out, great, great stuff. Appreciate you coming on, right? Appreciate your time. And if you're in Maryland and listening to this at any point, absolutely make your way through White Rabbit Gastro Pub. It is in Frederick, Maryland. The awesome kind of vibe, very common date night for my wife and I. And we love going there. Kenneth, appreciate you, man.
Thank you very much, Adam. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. For all those listening, appreciate you tuning in. Until next time, have fun and lead them up. We want to take a moment and thank our friends over at Chick-fil-A for partnering with us on the Lead 'Em Up podcast. Chick-fil-A is mostly well known for their incredible original chicken sandwich and those amazing waffle potato fries. But what people might not understand is there is a lot more going on behind the counter. You see, every Chick-fil-A is individually owned and operated by someone who deeply cares for their community and for their team. So next time you get an urge to go buy a Chick-fil-A, remember, it is more than just a chicken sandwich. We are thankful to Chick-fil-A and thankful for you for listening. So until next time, have fun and lead them up.